Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Wharton. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on business principles when we come back. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small businesses being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and all these swarms of government agents and agencies that are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot that we can do, and the first step is to inform ourselves as to the legal alternatives that we have between the public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It doesn't cost you anything. And let me tell you more about what you're not supposed to know about this thing called private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, and go to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. All right, we've been talking about business principles, and there's a lot of them. I've accumulated 150 of them, and when we broke off last time, I was on number 96. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. So I pointed out to you there that, you know, if you do business with some guy and he sticks it to you, you know, your common sense ought to tell you don't go back and do it twice. So when I do business with somebody and I give them plenty of rope, you know, I test people and see if they're honest, and never risk more than you can afford to lose, and you'll find out, you know, about six times out of ten, seven times out of ten, that the guy's dishonest or he's a sharpie. He takes advantage of you. Well, if a guy will take advantage of you over $10, he'll take advantage of you over $1,000 or $10,000 or $100,000. So if you don't want to be taken advantage of, when you see that a guy is basically dishonest or he's a little on the sharp side, that sends you a little signal. I don't think I want to do business with him. And remember, one of the business principles is you never lost any money on any deal you didn't make. So don't try to make every deal that comes your way. Take the deals, as I call it, cherry picking. You know, 10 people offer you a deal and you're not going to do all 10 of them. You're going to do one out of the 10. So you take the one that is the best for you out of the 10. And then you deal with the people that you deal with on a regular basis that you know are honest. I have a lot of people that I deal with that I've had good business relationships with for the last 20 or 30 years. And I keep going back and doing business with them over and over and over again because they're always profitable. Every time I make a deal with that guy, I always make money on it. He always makes money on it. Every time that we enter into a deal, people keep calling me back because they make money off of the deals that they make with me. And so over time, we, you know, maybe over 30 years, you've made 100 deals with this guy. And every one of those deals is paid off. You know, the first time that this guy gets dinged, you know, he's not coming back. So it's important that every deal you make, everybody leaves the table happy and satisfied. Now, again, I mentioned before, you know, you're not going to have 100%, but you want to have as high a percentage as you can get. Now, number 97 here, always guard your capital with your life. You learn that from the insurance companies. The reason that insurance companies are slow to pay, it's because they're using the average daily balance. So they're very slow to pay. If they owe you money today, they won't pay you for 90 days. They keep that money in their account, drawing interest on what they call the average daily balance. Now, they're guarding their capital with their life. In fact, they use the rule of 72, and if it's at all possible, they won't pay you for 7.2 years. That's why they put these cases into litigation, so that they don't have to pay you. So no insurance company will pay a claim over $50,000 without litigation. There are some exceptions to that, but the general rule, they're not going to pay. And that's because if it's $50,000 or more, it's worth stalling over. And the longer you stall it at interest, not an average daily balance, then the more money you're making off of somebody else's money. I mean, I owe you $1,000, but if I pay you today, I don't have the $1,000 drawing interest for me. If I pay you in 90 days, and I've had your money for 90 days drawing interest for me. Now, that's the way that game is played. So you guard your capital with your life. Now, let's take a sample of capital here. Let me show you something. What we're trying to do is to multiply our capital geometrically per annum. So the conventional wisdom is you buy stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and you average 5% per annum times 40 years compounded annually. And if you took $10,000 and did that in 1960 and cashed out in 2000, would be 40 years, you'd be called a genius. And that's because your $10,000 would have multiplied to $72,000 and some change. So you have made 7.2 times the amount of your investment. That's called genius. All right. Now, I don't do that because I'm not satisfied with 5% per annum, and I don't know of any businessman that is. And that's what we sell to wage earners in the form of IRAs and Kroger plans and things like that. And we call that genius, you know, when we do that. Now, let me show you something here. I happened to be down at Tim's one day some years back, and my wife was pushing her little push cart around the store, and she found some olive oil. So the olive oil was, I think it was $14 a can, $14 a gallon, which a few years back was a pretty good price. It was selling for $18 at Sam's Club and $14 at Tim's, and so there's five cans there on the counter, so she took five cans, put them in her basket. So Lynn comes by, she sees the five cans, she says, "Hey, you interested in any more olive oil?" And my wife said, "Well, it might be. What's the deal on it?" Now, my wife and I are over 70, and so we get what's called the senior discount, so they give us 10% off. Then if you pay cash, they'll give you another 10% off, so that's 20%. And then if you're paying cash and you don't need a receipt and you don't pay the sales tax, you let them pay the sales tax, you see. And so now, that's 27%. And so the week before, they had a truck come in, and it had 157 cans, 157 gallons of this olive oil on. Now, it's priced at $14, so we know that he paid $7 a can for it, right? So $7 a can times 157 cans, which is what they had in stock, is $1,099. So we just rounded off to $1,100. Last week, Tim wrote a check for $1,100, and he bought 157 cans of olive oil, and he priced it at $14 a can, and he wants to double his money to $2,200. Now, it's going to take him about 6 months selling a can a day, 157 cans, at about a can a day for the next 6 months, and he'll double his money. So on an annual basis, that means that he's making 200% return on his money. Now, that's 200% is a lot better than 5% compounded annually. This is why buying, selling, and trading is so good. Now, 200% is a good profit. You know, nobody can deny that. But Tim came up with this deal. Said, "We'll give you 10% for being an old person, 10% for cash, and 10% if you will take all 157 cans." So my wife said, "You're on." So she paid for the 157 cans. And I'll see what that amounts to. If you take 29% off, which is what the discount was, 29%, not 30, but on the 29%, that means that you've got $14 times 0.29. And that's $4.06. So if he's going to take off $4, we're going to pay $10 a can, right? All right, now there's 157 cans. And so 157 times 10 is $1,500. Actually, it's $1,570. So we take the $1,570. Now, how much did he pay for this? Remember, he paid $1,100. So he's going to make $570, isn't he? All right. So if Tim makes $570, let's just plug in 570. And he paid $1,100, so we divide that by $1,100. He makes $518 profit, so we'll say $500 profit off of his $1,100. So we take $500 divided by $1,100. He makes a 45% profit. Is he better off to take the 45% profit right now, today? Or should he wait and sell this so that he can make a full 100%, double his money, over the next 6 months? We'll give you a few seconds to think that over. Because if he sells it a can a day, he's gonna make $7 a can profit. But if he sells all of it right now today, see, he's only going to make $3 a can profit. He's going to give us $4 a can off. So would you rather make $7 a can profit over the next 6 months, or would you rather make $3 a can profit right now today? All right. Well, here's what this works out to be, and this will show you how your capital is important to you. Tim had $1,100 in his pocket, so he went out and bought 157 cans of olive oil, and he sold them in 1 week, 7 days or less, and he made a $500 profit off of his $1,100, 45%. If we multiply that times 52 weeks in a year, his actual profit is 2,300% per annum. Remember, we're calculating 5% per annum when we bought our stocks on the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Well, this transaction makes 2,300%. Now, he's only going to make 200% per annum if he keeps it for 180 days. All right, now here's the bottom line. Oftentimes people are angry with the Jews because of their business practices. I hear this quite often. It is true that all Jews can count. Christians can't count. They go to public school. Now, instead of getting mad at people because of their race or because they're able to count, why don't we learn how to count? See, I'm not complaining about the Jews, the IRS, or the FBI, or the Homeland Security. Because once you learn how the game is played, then you start playing the game yourself. And pretty soon, when your capital is involved, you want to guard your capital with your life, because that capital is what makes you your profit. So now that he sold it and took his $500, he's got his $1,100 back plus his $500 profit. Now he can go out and reinvest his $1,100 next week and the week after and the week after. The more often you turn your merchandise, the more profit you make. So you want to turn your merchandise every day if possible, every week if not, once a month is not bad. But, you know, once a year is the bare minimum. So you're going to turn your inventory once a year, and you want to double your money every year. So your $1,100 capital, bare minimum, needs to turn into $2,200 at the end of the year. That's your goal. And if you can do that in 6 months, well, then that's twice as good. If you can do that in 3 months, that's four times as good, and so on up the line. So that's what we're dealing with when we're dealing with capital. Always guard your capital with your life. That's number 97. Number 98, business does not stop at 5 o'clock. And if you stop at 5 o'clock and go home, you're going to find out that you're not going to do well in business. You probably should stay working for somebody else. I find, for instance, here at the law school, I probably work 12 hours a day on average, 6 days a week. That's about a 60-hour week. And I'm an old man. And when I was younger, I did more than that. And the day doesn't end at 5 o'clock. Customers may be calling you at 9 o'clock at night, at 11 o'clock at night, at 7 o'clock in the morning. You know, you never know when a customer is going to call. And you can't say, well, 5 o'clock. I notice this when you're in a store and it's coming up to 5 o'clock. You can tell the employees from the owner. When the owner's there, he says, take your time. I've got all night. When an employee is there at 10 minutes to 5, they turn off half the lights and announce to you that they're closing in 10 minutes. I mean, it's like a bar, you know, at a quarter to 1. Hey, last call. Last call coming up. All right, those are employees, and employees are good people, but they're not businessmen. They're all business boys. That's why they're employees. Employees are business boys, not businessmen. Now, number 99, just because a business is efficient does not mean that the business is profitable. So you take a look at your profit, and profit is what you make off of your capital. So you take a look at your inventory, you take a look at your capitalization, say, hey, listen, I have invested here this amount of money. Let's take your house, for instance. Now, here's my house. And I have invested in this house $50,000. And how much does this $50,000 a year pay me? How much am I making off of this investment every year? Well, if you bought a house some years back and you paid $100,000 for it, and today the house is worth $50,000, then you lost $50,000. If you got a $50,000 equity and you got a $50,000 house, then you didn't make anything off the house, did you? Now, somebody will say to me, well, you see, if you own the house, you're making payments and you're developing equity, but if you rent, you're throwing your money away on rent receipts. Well, I do a story here in my business school on buying a house, and I'm going to tell you the answer. I won't tell you how we arrive at it just yet, but if you buy a house for $50,000 at 6% interest and you pay the payments $300 a month for 360 months, the net loss on that house is a little over $90,000. So buying a house and owning the house for longer than 5 years is a net loss. So if you've got a house and you've been paying on it for 15 years, you've already got a loss. And most people are unable to calculate this because, you see, buying a house or owning a house or home ownership is equivalent to what we call in this country the American dream. So I just wanted to point out to you that this American dream over here may be the American dream, but that doesn't mean that it's an efficient business. So a business may appear to be very efficient, and it may be that you believe that you're making a profit, but if you're a homeowner and you're paying payments on your house and you've paid those payments for longer than 5 years, you're a net loser, and you may actually believe that you're making a profit, when in reality, you're losing money because you're unable to count. You're unable to do business. You're unable to do the calculations. That's the importance of learning business and becoming a businessman instead of a business boy. All right, number 100, a good name is better than gold. And we get that from the book of Proverbs. God himself says that a good name is better than gold. And that's because if people that you do business with speak highly of you, then other people will want to do business with you. Conversely, if people that you do business with speak evil of you, the people that they talk to will not want to do business with you. Now, it has occurred from time to time, and people have done this to me. They've said, you know, we're going to badmouth you unless you do this and such. Now, there's a statute in the scripture that prohibits bribery. it prohibits taking a gift. So I'm pretty adamant about being blackmailed. So when people say to me, you know, if you don't do this, then I'm not going to do that, and if you do this, then here's what I'm going to do. I don't take gifts, and I'm not motivated by bribes, and I don't pay blackmail. Now, there's a reward that comes from that. If you steal, the penalty is 5 times the amount that you steal. The law says, thou shalt not steal. That law is not in a vacuum. And the penalty for theft is 2, 4, 5, or 7 times the amount of the theft. So anytime somebody steals something from you, you suffer a loss. The person who stole it from you does not make a gain. He has a loss of 2, 4, or 5 times, and sometimes even 7 times, the amount that he stole. So if you stole something from me, you didn't make any money on it. What will happen is the engine of your car will blow up, or this will happen to you, or that will happen to you, your kid will fall down, break his arm, and then your health insurance ran out, or something on that order. Now, that's the way that game is played. So always tuck that away in your heart. There's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. If you could have a broken law without a penalty, you wouldn't have a law, you would have a suggestion. The Ten Commandments are not suggestions. Those are laws put out by a sovereign who has penalties that apply to each and every one of them. And when you break that law, then there is a penalty that you have to pay. Here in America, we're paying a lot of penalties, and these penalties are mounting up on us, and that's why we see so much problem here in this country. All right, now, everybody has 10 friends, and this is what we're capitalizing on. If you've got 10 friends, and you tell your 10 friends, the statistical numbers work like this. If you were to send out a notice to 100 people, 2%, 2 people out of 100 will respond. Of those 2 people that respond, 10% will actually buy from you. So you have to send out 1,000 brochures or catalogs to get 20 people to respond to make 2 sales. Now, that's the statistical average. So when a guy, you ever wonder about this, you know, you're sitting there watching the news and the phone rings and you get up and you walk over to the phone and the guy says, yeah, this is an important message, don't hang up, and he wants to sell you siding. And it's just a recorded message on an answering machine. Hell, it isn't even a live person on the other end. You ever wonder why they do that? Because you get mad as hell and you slam the phone down. Okay. Well, they're just playing a numbers game. When they dial 1,000 telephone calls, they make 2 sales, just as regular as clockwork. Now, they didn't sell you and they didn't sell me, but they sold somebody else. Now, that being the case, you actually can do better than that. If you qualify your customers, you qualify your leads, you know, you can sell as high as 50%, and that's 5 out of 10. But that's what you're actually working on here, and that if you've got 10 customers, and those 10 customers have 10 friends, and you have 10 satisfied customers, then those 10 satisfied customers will tell their 10 friends. Those 10 friends, in turn, will turn out to be 2 more sales, and that's the way that game is played. So the best advertisement that you have is your satisfied customer. And remember, you always want to pay your customer more than you agreed to, or you want to deliver more to your customer than you agreed to accept. And then when you pay, you want to pay on time, or you want to pay early, or you want to do something for the seller. That's why I always say, you know, pay your rent 5 days early rather than on time or 5 days late. Number 102, learn from your competitor. You know, Kmart has not learned anything from Walmart. I very seldom go into a Kmart store, and it just stands right out. As a businessman, it just jumps out at me. The difference between Walmart and Kmart is like day and night. And then I just invite you to just go test it. Walk into a Walmart store and start looking around, watch the way business is handled. Then walk into a Kmart store and just make your observations and ask yourself, which would you rather be in, Walmart or Kmart? The success of Walmart is not an accident. It's a well thought out, well designed business plan, and they're good at it, and it pays off. And so I learned from that, and I said, you know, you should learn from your competitor. So if you've got a competitor and he's got a certain share of the market here, take a look at what he does, and then do just exactly what he's doing, and you'll be at least equal with him, at least equal. And the customer out there is either going to choose between you or your competitor because you're equal with your competitor. Number 103, competitive capitalism tends to monopoly. Now, monopoly is bad, and I'll show you that as we progress along. Bureaucracy and monopoly are not good for consumption, consumers, or business. It isn't even good for the monopolist or the bureaucrat, because over time the system breaks down and collapses, and that's what the world is going through now. It's going through a bureaucratic collapse, and it occurs every once in a while. I guess we need to do that in order to get back to reason, logic, and common sense. It's tragic, and it costs a lot of lives, and a lot of wars get fought over this thing of competitive capitalism, but I guess that's the price you pay. Now, if you'll take a look in America, we had 2,600 car companies in this country between 1900 and about 1940. 2,600 different brands of cars, you know, like White and Stanley Steamer, Locomobile, Winton's, Rio's, you know, all kinds of brands that today are only in museums. All right, today we only have three car companies left. That's the result of competitive capitalism tends to monopoly. Okay, so tuck that one away in your heart. Now, we're living in a very bureaucratic and monopolistic society. So trying to break into the car company, like car business, like John DeLorean, see, the bureaucracy protects the status quo. So the purpose behind all these rules and regulations that regulate automobiles is to keep you out of the business. The reason that we have all of these EPA rules is to keep you out of the oil business so you can't compete with Exxon and Mobil. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't a lot of other opportunities out there. It just means that in the computer business, you're probably locked out by now. In the oil business, you're locked out. In the automobile business, you're locked out. In the airline business, you're locked out. See, these are old-time monopolies that are protected by government bureaucracy. And so they ultimately collapse. The ultimate end of the banking monopoly in America is collapse, and the ultimate end of the auto industry in America is collapse. So tuck that one away in your heart. And then number 104, keep your living standards at one half of your income. As a businessman, you don't want to overspend. Remember, the more capital that you have to invest in yourself, in your own business, the more money you'll make. If you have $10,000 to invest, you'll make a profit on your $10,000, and over the course of a year, you should double your money from $10,000 to $20,000. That gives you a $10,000 a year standard of living. If you keep your living standard at one half of your investment capital, or one half of your profit, then you'll have $15,000. Then you can go from 15 to 30. Now, if you keep that at half, then you'll have from 15, 7,500. So now you'll have $22,500 in the following year. That'd be 3 years out. By keeping your living standards at one half, then you're adding to your capital by 50% a year. And so by the time you have $100,000 in capital that you can invest in yourself every year, then your $100,000 will double to $200,000. So now you're making $100,000 a year. Now, if you squander everything, you take your $10,000 a year and you spend it all, then you'll always be at the $10,000 level. You can never grow. So in order to grow, I like to grow at 50% a year. So if you live a lifestyle of $50,000 a year, which is about the median average income here in America, $50,000 a year, round numbers, that means then that you have no investment capital. You just spend everything that you make. Most Americans live beyond their $50,000. They spend $60,000. So they're making $50,000 and spend $60,000. That comes to an end when they can no longer service the debt. If you're living at $40,000 and making $50,000, well, then you're taking 20% and adding that to your capital every year. That's good. That's called savings. But if you'd live at $25,000, you'd be saving $50,000. You'd be growing at 50% a year. That's a pretty hefty growth rate. That's number 104. Keep your living standard at one half of your income. Hey, we're at the halfway point here. I'm going to have to give you a reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by pre-arrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and a compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about business principles. There are certain principles in business that we follow. And if you follow those and you'll make more money than you spend, you'll have a profit at the end of the year, or you'll be more successful at your business enterprise as you progress along. And some of these come from the Bible. Some of them come from other businessmen, you know, people like Henry Kaiser is one, Warren Buffett, and Bill Gates, Walmart. You know, you can observe what other businesses do and just copy and follow what their modus operandi is. You know, I look at the insurance industry. I was trained as a youngster as a claims adjuster, and I took a look at insurance, and I said, yeah, this insurance is a ripoff. It's a scam. Hell, I knew that when I was 23. And so I don't buy insurance. I don't buy it because I can see what a scam it is. Now, most people buy insurance because they believe in it. Now, why do you believe in insurance? Because that's what you were taught. It's what you were trained in. So you are the net sum total of all of your experiences. You have 5 senses. You know, you can see, hear, taste, touch, and smell. And all of the information that's in your brain came through those 5 senses. You had to see it, hear it, taste it, touch it, or smell it, or you couldn't know it. Now, that being the case, then, why do you believe what you believe? Well, it's because that's what was pumped into your brain. That's what somebody wanted you to know, so that's what they told you. And then you believed it, whether it's evolution or special creation or it's Jesus or Allah or it's Walmart or Kmart, whatever it happens to be, Ford or Chevrolet. That's what you believe, and that's fine. No problem there. Now, just because you believe it doesn't make it true. And just because it isn't true, it may cost you some money. So I pointed out to you, I don't buy insurance. I take that money and I self-insure myself, and then I pay cash. And so these are principles that if you follow them, will put more money in your pocket, at least, you know, on average, over the long haul. The cost of production must equal something less than the selling price. I mean, you know, you don't have to be real smart to figure that out, but your cost of production must equal something less than the selling price. And the correct ratio is 50%. So when I tell you I follow the 2% principle, that's just a little humorous anecdote that we put on the correct number for calculating your profit margin. Buy it for a dollar and sell it for two. That's what we call a 100% markup or a 50% profit. All right, the selling price must always be more than the cost of production. Okay, so the two go together. The selling price must always be more than the cost of the production. So the cost of production should be a dollar and the selling price should be two. It's how simple that is. No fuss, no muss there. All right, so now next we need the difference is called profit. So the difference between the selling price and the cost of production and is what we call profit. That's a four-letter word in some people's vocabulary. But to us, those of us that are entrepreneurs, those of us that are businessmen, we think that profit is a virtue, not a four-letter word. Now, I want you to notice that the people who believe that profit is a four-letter word are all poor, virtually all poor. If you take people like Warren Buffett and Bill Gates and so on, they preach socialism, but they practice competitive capitalism. And the people who practice monopoly, the people who practice socialism, are the union workers who are working for wages, and the people that I call business boys. And you notice they're all poor? Virtually all of them are land starved. They don't own 5, 10, 20 acres. So you should have a goal in life, and that's called your business plan, and your goal should include something like you need a house on 5, 10, 20 acres, and that's paid for free and clear. Now you're starting to accumulate property. And if you've got a mortgage on this property, like most people have a house in the suburbs, in the city, or close thereby with a mortgage on it, those are the business boys. They don't practice profit. They want to practice monopoly. And they do. And so they belong to the labor union, and they're practicing monopoly. Like, you can't fire me because I've got seniority. This is what they do in Congress. See? Now, it is true that monopoly pays well. The congressional people, that is, the representatives and the senators, and the bureaucracy, the people that work in these government agencies, these are called bureaucrats. These people don't make a profit. They have to be subsidized. So in business, we either have to make a profit or a subsidy. And so government is supported by subsidies. Business is supported by profits. And all businesses make profit. General Electric, they preach socialism, but they practice profits. All right, so tuck that one away in your heart. Monopoly and bureaucracy are kissing cousins. So when you're looking at a bureaucracy in government, what you're looking at here is a monopoly. And when you're looking at General Motors, General Electric, Ford, you know, these are monopolies. You and I cannot make automobiles and compete with General Motors. We cannot make electric motors and compete with General Electric. See, we're barred from those monopolies. All right, now, that being the case, that is the result of competitive capitalism tending to monopoly, which it does, and it always has, and it probably always will. All right, now, monopoly and tyranny are next of kin. Monopoly and bureaucracy are kissing cousins, and monopoly and tyranny are next of kin. So these things work together, and they don't work together accidentally. It's done on purpose, and there's a good reason for it. It makes them a lot of money. Now, the tragedy of it is that over time, it's unsustainable. I mean, you can only do this for a certain period of time. So let's take a look at our governmental apparatus here. If you'll take a look at where we started in 1776, we had a small limited government. Over time, it has grown and grown dramatically. Now, take a look at our debt structure, and you'll see that our debt is doubling, or over the last 3 years, it's been doubling every year. This year, it won't double. It'll just go up by $1.4 trillion. And that's because doubling every year is unsustainable. But because we have a fiat monetary system instead of a property-based monetary system, it's unsustainable unless you continually put more fiat currency into the economy. So you have to continually put more money into the economy every year to keep it working. But when you do that, it doubles every so many years. That's geometric progression, and geometric progression comes to an end. So we're reaching the end of geometric progression in debt and monetary policy, and as a result of that, it will collapse. There isn't any ifs, ands, or buts about it. Then we'll have to go back to square one and do this thing over again. Now, in the process of doing that, a lot of people lose a lot of money. They lose a lot of houses. They lose a lot of property. All right, so the real estate meltdown is simply the geometric progression reaching its peak, leveling off, and then collapsing. And if you take a look at property values today, your property values will decline by another 50% over the next year or two. So if I had a piece of real estate today and I had an opportunity to sell it, I would sell it today, because if you look at the price of gold and silver, the price of gold and silver will double over the next year or two. So I would rather take the real estate and convert it into gold and silver, because I believe that gold and silver will double before real estate does. Now, sometimes you make an error, sometimes you make a miscalculation. When you deal in property, it doesn't make any difference because you still have the property. But when you're dealing in contracts and credit and you make a mistake, you go bankrupt. The difference is this. I got a piece of ground over here on a road, and I should have sold it in 2005. And if I had and converted it to gold, my net purchasing power today would be double, triple, or quadruple what it is. But you see, I owned the piece of ground over there on that road free and clear, so it didn't cost me anything and I didn't lose a dime. I never lost any money on the deal I didn't make. Now, I wished I had sold it, but, life's life, I didn't sell it. Now, if I had bought that piece of ground over there 5 years ago, and I was making payments on it, and the real estate values had been cut in half, then I would still be making those payments on a piece of ground that's worth half as much. Furthermore, I've got many years more to pay on this loss, don't I? All right, so that's the difference between property and contract. That's the property, the difference between fiat currency and gold and silver. Those of us that deal in gold and silver in our daily trade are dealing in property. Now, God told us to deal in property. Do not deal in unjust weights and balances. So what you're seeing going on, what you're witnessing going on around the world, is the penalty for those people that dealt in things like stocks and bonds and mortgages and interest and usury. Now they're paying the penalty. And I'm sad. It's too bad. I'm sorry that happened to you. But okay, now remember, one of the things that we do is we learn from the mistakes of others. And the best teacher that you can get is your own personal experience. It's just that it's a god-awful hard way to learn. I prefer learning from other people's mistakes. My daddy explained that to me years ago. He said, son, you're better off to learn from other people's mistakes. So that's what I try to do. All right, let's go on to the next one over here. Monopolists believe that competition is a sin. Competition is a sin. I don't think that the competition between Walmart and Kmart is a sin. And you people over at Kmart need to wake up and smell the coffee. At least use your head and go over and copy. You don't have to be new. You don't have to be innovative. You don't have to be smarter than. You just have to be a good copycat and go over and do what the people at Walmart are already doing, and then you will be equal with Walmart. And there isn't any reason why you couldn't copy the Walmart business model. But the people at Kmart haven't been smart enough to do that yet. Hence, as a result of that, I sit here and I shake my head and I go, oh my God, I can't believe that these people haven't been smart enough to at least copy what somebody else has already done or pioneered. Now, these people have what they call monopolies, and monopoly does not tend to innovation. And as a result of that, they become moribund, and then they degenerate, and they get worse and worse and poorer and poorer. That's why you see the bureaucracy degenerate. You can't get good service out of a bureaucracy, because where else are you going to buy your automobile registration? Where else are you going to get your driver's license? So they don't have to satisfy the buying public. They can just be as rude and nasty and as inefficient as they want to be. That's because they have a monopoly. Now, the black market and the free market are two names for the same animal. And so when you hear people talk about the black market or the underground economy, etc., they're jealous, they're angry, they're monopolists, socialists, and bureaucrats, and they're angry with the free market. God, they hate it. And that's because the free market takes business away from them. They want all of the business, and it just makes them mad as hell. See, doctors are like that. They hate alternative medicine. They hate people who take vitamins and minerals and herbs, etc., because, see, they've got the medical monopoly, and they don't want any competition. And so any alternative healthcare practitioner is a competitor, so they call them quacks. Now, get this. You go to your doctor, and you say, what's wrong with me? He says, you got cancer. And so you say, well, doc, do you know what causes cancer? He says, no. Doc, can you cure this cancer? He says, no. Doc, can you treat this cancer? He says, oh, you bet. That's what we're here for. We're here to treat it. It costs you $100,000 to treat it. So you say to yourself, well, let me get a second opinion. So you go over to a naturopath. And you say to the naturopath, sir, can you tell me what causes cancer? He says, yes, it's your bad diet. And then you ask him, sir, can you cure this cancer? Certainly. Certainly. We can cure this cancer by changing your diet. And then you say, well, how much is this going to cost? Oh, probably cost you $1,000, $1,500 to change your diet. Now, here you've got these two alternatives, and you know where you're going to go. You're going to go spend $100,000 with the medical doctor because he says this other guy over here is a quack, and he's only going to charge you $1,500 to change your diet and cure your cancer. And you will buy what the allopathic medical doctor has to sell because that's what you've been taught to buy. And it's just as natural as it could be for the medical doctor to run down the alternative healthcare guy because it's going to cost him $100,000 worth of insurance. And you don't want to spend $1,500 out of your pocket for an alternative cure when you've got full coverage medical care. So you use your insurance, you go to the allopathic physician, and in 18 months you die. That's the way the game is played. It's been that way, you know, for 100 years or more. Nothing's going to change that. I'm not here to change it. But the guy that is in the underground economy, see, there's a business model. People that don't have insurance and they've expended what they've got, they want a $1,500 cure. And that's why they go to Switzerland and Mexico and other places to get these alternative cures, alternative medicine. So the black market and the free market are two names for the same animal. Now, entrepreneur, capitalist, free market, free enterprise, competition, free choice, and profit are all four-letter words to these monopolists, doctors, lawyers, bureaucrats. They hate it. But for people like you and me, you know, the little guys down here at the bottom of the pond, the bottom of the pool, the free market is actually the best buy for our dollar. Now, there are only two business models here on planet Earth. It's the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and it's the 10 commandments. And so we've got these two business models. It's the 10 planks, and it's the 10 commandments. Now, the bureaucrats and the monopolists, they hate the 10 commandment model because there's no profit in it. They don't make anything off of that. Medical doctors hate the Ten Commandment model because the Ten Commandment model says don't eat fat, don't eat pork, don't eat shellfish. If everybody practiced the 19 health laws of the Bible, there wouldn't be any sickness or disease. Boys and girls, you have to go out and break the law to get sick. I mean, you got to get up in the morning and go do something. Otherwise, you couldn't get sick. Now, the average Joe Sixpack medical doctor isn't out here saying, here, let me give you a prescription for some fat at McDonald's, but you see, the system is set up so that the bureaucracy, that's your legislature, has created 30% fat in your hamburger. And that's because the food industry, that is the meatpacking industry, came to the legislature and said, pass us a fat law, and they did. So the fat law says if any meatpacker, jobber, or wholesaler shall be found to put more than 30% fat in a hamburger, he shall be guilty of a misdemeanor. It's worded, and it sounds like the legislature and the meatpackers, like Armour and Swift, are trying to protect you against fat. No, that's not true at all. They're the guys that are selling fat. They put 40% fat in your bologna, 40% fat in your hot dogs, 30% fat in your hamburger, and your God told you not to eat any fat. And your naturopath is going to tell you stop eating fat. The medical doctor doesn't do that. He says eat anything you want. If it tastes good, eat it. And then come to us and we'll give you a pill. Or we'll cut it out, or we'll transplant a new liver or a new heart or new lungs or something else for you. We'll give you some spare parts from somebody else. Kind of like going to the wrecking yard, you know, and getting a generator or starter off of a wrecked car and putting it on yours. Now, that's the way the game is played. That's not the most profitable modality. It's not a good business model. As a business model, the ultimate end of it is destruction, death. But that's the business model that's in play. And so those of us that want to be free market capitalists, then we have to recognize that the monopolists are in control. And then we have to work for ourselves and against the monopolists to protect ourselves from the bureaucracy and the monopoly. How do you like that? So I have to make a living here in the real world, and I can't do it in the auto industry because they've got a monopoly. Can't do it in the oil industry because they've got a monopoly. So I have to practice the Ten Commandment model, and everybody badmouths that one, especially the preachers. They tell you plainly that the Ten Commandment model is abolished and done away with. You don't have to do that. And that's because the preachers, along with the politicians, and along with the monopolists and the bureaucrats, are all working together against the Ten Commandments, and they have replaced that with the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's why you have a socialist welfare state here. It's very, very profitable for these professions. It's very profitable for lawyers, doctors, politicians, and preachers. And that's why they promote it. That's why they teach it in your public schools. The education system is a monopoly, and it's supported by the two teachers' union, or the two unions. Makes all the sense in the world. It's bad for us, but it's good for them. And, of course, we're the people that make the production. We're the guys that produce the houses and produce the cars and produce all the goods and services that are out there for the monopolists and the bureaucrats to consume. So it's to their advantage to keep us working for them. See how simple that is? All right. Now, conversely, it's to our advantage to abandon monopoly, abandon bureaucracy, abandon socialism, abandon the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, and to go back to the Ten Commandment model, which produced all of the wealth, all of the property, all of the surplus between 1787 and 1933. See how simple that is? All right, we're talking about business principles, and we're up here to about number 110. Maybe a little bit more than that. I'll count them up tomorrow. And I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School in the Visabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's eight schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.